Hello, this is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. And for you digital darlings, our website is kptz.org. That's where you can listen to today's show live. You can also sample some of our earlier shows, which are online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are those weather-beaten guys throwing crab pots off the pier at the Marine Science Center? And who's the woman dressed completely in black down to black spike-heeled boots, toddling down the stairs at the post office? Then there's the foreign tourists swaddled in down parkas, acting like they're on an Arctic expedition. Why didn't I look at a weather map? It's not really that cold here. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, lawyers and ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County, amid the deer, the otters, and even the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today's guest is someone who's relatively new in town, but he fills a key role in the community. My guest today is Carr Tindall, the general manager of the Port Townsend Paper Mill. The mill, as you probably know, is the largest private employer in Port Townsend, with 300 employees. The mill's employees are largely members of the United Steelworkers Union, so we're talking about solid salaries, good health benefits, and things like employer matching 401k retirement accounts. Welcome to the show, Carr.
Thank you.
I usually start with asking my guests if they're Port Townsend born and bred, but from the minute you open your mouth, people will guess that you're not from around these parts.
Right.
So where did you grow up?
North Carolina, very close to Durham, North Carolina.
Was it a big town?
No, the town I grew up in was very small. Yanceyville was probably half the size of Port Townsend, much smaller, very rural area.
Okay. Well, now, you have a really unusual name. Carr, which, by the way, listeners, is spelled C-A-R-R, is pretty unusual for a first name. What's the story behind the name?
Well, my family is, as I said, from North Carolina, and specifically my father was from the Goldsboro or Kinston, North Carolina area, and that's a surname, C-A-R-R, and Tindall, of course, surname, and my great-great-grandmother's last name was Carr, so I have her name as my name, or her surname as my name.
But you told me that's really your middle name.
It is. My first name is Lemuel. I try not to tell many people that, but now I have.
Now you have. Now you spilled the beans.
I did. But I go by Carr.
Okay. So did you go to school in North Carolina?
I did. I went through grade school in Yanceyville and a little town called Roxboro, and then I graduated and went to college at North Carolina State University, and my degree is actually in paper science, so I have a bachelor of science degree in paper science.
Okay, now, I've never really heard of a degree in paper science. What do you study? What were some of the courses?
It's a lot of chemistry, chemical engineering, mainly, and I would say it was closely aligned to chemical engineering, but it's very specific for the paper industry. When I went to school, I had never heard of it. Like a lot of kids at school, I didn't have much money, and I was tired of going to school, so I wanted a job when I got out. It was one of the better majors on campus to get. It always seemed to have 100% employment and good salaries.
Well, that's important.
So I got in the program. Luckily, I could get in and qualify. And then I worked for a summer at a paper mill in Virginia. Really enjoyed the work, really enjoyed the people I worked with, and thought it would be a good career. So I returned to school and actually tried to improve my grade. So it was good incentive and got out the next year.
As a kid at the paper mill in your first job, what did they actually let you do?
The mill that I worked for had an issue with a regional waste treatment plant. They sent all their water wastewater to that, and it was too warm. So the project I had was trying to understand where the heat was going, where could they recover heat and make the mill more efficient. And it was quite a bit of just going around taking data every day. It was, I call it kind of a grunt work. And then I also did a lot of work around the quality control or test lab, trying to validate our test procedures or make sure we're standardized on what we were testing in the, I call it chemistry of the mill, and making sure we did our test procedures were standardized from operator to operator.
So you went back to school for your last year to finish up. Was this a big program or just a few people in it?
My graduating class, there were about 30 people, so it's not a really big program. Washington State actually has a similar program too. So.
And because it's so specialized, I assume the counselors were really active in helping the kids get the right jobs.
Oh, they were. They were. Yeah, and it was very lucky in that there was good employment, so the paper companies knew that program and liked it, and so they were on campus interviewing, so pretty much you had interviews every week if you wanted to, and it was fairly easy to get employment. It wasn't hard like some majors, but it was kind of we were sought after.
Art history or something like that.
Yeah, well, now I like art.
I know. I'm just, okay, so what then was your first full-time gig out of school?
First full-time job was in North Carolina. It was a little mill called Jackson Paper, and it restarted. It was 100% recycle, and what I mean by that is we took old corrugated boxes and pulped them up. If you can imagine this gigantic blender that took the pieces of paper with water and slurried them up, and then we made corrugating medium on the machine. And just to explain that, corrugating medium is the fluted center of a corrugated box.
Mm-hmm.
I was, again, kind of charged with setting up some of the quality control labs. We had to test the paper, make sure it met customer specs. I helped with customer complaints. And then the environmental testing. There was not a great deal of environmental testing, but what we had, I had to do as far as discharge of the wastewater, making sure it met the permit requirements.
Huh. It sounds very technical.
Yes, it's good that I'm making it sound hard. It wasn't as hard as I'm making it sound. It was actually a lot of stuff that very smart people had thought up, and a lot of my job was just putting in the procedures and understanding how to run the test and make it simple. It was not that tough once you understood it.
So how long did you stay with them?
It was about 2 years, and then I had an opportunity to go with the bigger mill. It was called Gilman Paper, and it was in St. Mary's, Georgia. I've always been pretty adventurous, so growing up in North Carolina, I wanted to move somewhere else, and this was an opportunity to move to an area. It's right on the Georgia-Florida border, and that mill was also fascinating because it made a kind of wide variety of products. They had three paper machines. One machine made craft bags, much like Port Townsend used to make more of, but these are the grocery bags and multi-wall sacks that you see. The other machine made coated board. That's milk cartons and juice boxes. And the third machine made printing and writing paper or wrapping paper, a little more specialty grade. So that mill actually took chips and cooked the chips and then bleached the pulp. And so it had a whole lot more equipment and a lot more to see. It was much more fascinating.
So did this mill make really upscale paper?
It did. It was much more upscale than the corrugating medium at the small mill I had worked at.
So the other day we were talking about really upscale paper, like the kind that are used for currency.
Oh, yes. Yes, what I mentioned is that I worked at a mill later in my career, and we sold pulp overseas, and one of my jobs was to assist the customers with technical issues. And I got to go to a mill in the Netherlands that actually made currency and bond paper. What they did was, it's called shadow marking and watermarking, and you use... it's a little hard to describe on the radio, but a dandy roll, and this has an impression. And some of the paper they made would have these impressions so that if you held the bill up to the light, you could see this marking in the paper, and that's how you know it's authentic. And they did this for bond and currencies, which they sold all over the world, quite a bit in Asia at the time, and specifically in Korea, Thailand, and those places.
Yeah, I've read about this, where, you know, you can hold the bill or whatever up, and there are little secret things in there.
The company that makes our currency, Crane, they're out of Massachusetts, and if you ever hold the 20 up, I know for sure, it's probably in other ones, there's actually a little thread, and it, being curious about these things, I tore one apart, and you pull out a little plastic piece, and it has 20 written across it, but it's actually embedded in the $20 bill if you look at it.
Really? That's interesting.
But our currency is really very sophisticated, and I've never been to that mill. I'd love to go, but it's...
that would be fascinating.
I think it's pretty secure. They don't want anybody in there that doesn't need to be
well,
there.
Well, I can understand that. On the other hand, you're an industry person. Maybe they'll make an exception and let you in.
Yes, that's right. Hopefully.
Okay, let's talk a little bit, but not too much, about your career. I know you mentioned that you wanted to travel, and I got a feeling you managed to do quite a lot of it.
Yes, I kind of go through. I worked at Gilman Paper, and then in 1986, I went to, it was just outside of Savannah, a town called Port Wentworth, and worked for a larger mill there. And I went in, I had been in a technical jobs, and this job that I took at Port Wentworth was shift supervisor, and it was more in the management side. And I really enjoyed that. It was shift work, which is tough, as you can ask any of the people doing it at the mill. And we had the eight-hour shifts. Luckily, at Port Townsend, they're on to a little more sophisticated 12-hour shift. But eight-hour shifts, you worked seven nights from 11 at night till 7 in the morning. Then you were off for a day or two. And then you worked, starting on Friday, I remember that, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 11 at night. And you worked seven of those. Then you went on Saturday, 7 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, worked seven of those. And unfortunately, you only got one weekend off a month. And it was like you were always changing. Your body never really got used to it.
It's hard.
It is. But the job was good, and the mill was productive. And they actually spent a good bit of money on the mill, and it was exciting to be involved in that. They did a $350 million project, and I was a part of expanding that. It was my portion was probably $50 million. It was a lot of the pulping operation. So it was a good experience. Then I was asked to do a job as technical director. So as technical director, I got more involved in the quality of the products that we sold, customer issues, and then environmental issues. And that quality side is where I actually did the travel to Europe, a lot to Asia. I've been to Japan, then South America. Then I was asked to do that at a corporate level. My next job, I actually was involved in international sales of our liner board, and we'd go overseas and help them work with boxes.
Well, you know, I was surprised the other day when you told me that there are issues across the globe. They have set standards, like the one that we were talking about the other day, the edge crush test.
You're very smart. Yes.
So tell me what that's about.
Well, ECT test, and I was explaining that if you can imagine the world 100 years ago, there were no standards, and if you wanted to ship something, the railroad would gladly pack it, but they weren't responsible for damaging it or whatever happened, and of course, it's pretty bumpy. Over time, the Department of Transportation established what's called Rule 41, and it was a burst specification on boxes. They didn't want them to break open. And then as we got a little smarter, we realized that, well, the boxes weren't bursting, but things were still damaged, and especially produce. I used the example of watermelons or tomatoes. They would get bruised easily when you stack the boxes one on top of another. And that's when they realized that it's the edge crush or the stacking strength of a box. So if you look on a corrugated box, there's usually a round impression or imprint, and it tells you what the ECT value. And the box I showed you was what we call a 32 ECT box. And for us in the paper industry, that just tells you the combination of papers that make it up. But it's a 35-pound liner and usually a 23-pound medium and a 35-pound liner. And that combination gives you stacking strength that's equal to a 32 edge crush or edge compression test.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today is Carr Tindall, the general manager of Port Townsend Paper Mill. We've been discussing some of the quality issues that arise with paper products. So, Carr, the first part of your career was at mills in the southern part of the U.S., but at some point you moved to Iowa, which at first blush seems to me an unlikely place for a paper mill. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Yes, it was located on the Mississippi River. Mississippi separates Illinois and Iowa. It's in the southeast corner, and there are trees actually in Iowa. They're along the eastern side along the Mississippi River. But it was a small mill there, and I was asked to manage it. I had worked a good bit of my career for a gentleman named Roger Stone. It was Stone Container. His family had owned it, and he had been the CEO. That company was merged with another company called Jefferson Smurfit to form Smurfit Stone Container. Roger Stone left that. He purchased another company called Box USA, and that's the mill that was in Iowa, and I was asked to run it. And I did that for about 5 years. He eventually sold that mill to International Paper.
So how did you end up in Port Townsend?
Well, I worked for International Paper for a period of time, and a gentleman named Mike Exner was my boss at that time, and left there and went back to Smurfit Stone, worked for another 8 years in Jacksonville, Florida, helping them manage their capital program and operational improvements. Worked for some other people, Steve Klinger and Mike Exner again. Mike came to work there. They left and later on formed the company through a private equity partnership and this Crown Paper and purchased the Port Townsend Mill. Then they asked me in March of 2015 if I would be interested in managing the mill. So it was through that acquaintance that I wound up in Port Townsend.
So had you ever been here before?
I had not.
Did you accept the job before you visited the place?
You know, I did. I had been to Washington and thought I'd always wanted to be here. Mm-hmm. And actually, I looked up Port Townsend on a map, and I thought, now that is a really neat place. Mm-hmm. And as I told you earlier, I really love the mountains and the outdoors, hiking, and it's certainly a great place for that.
Well, you've certainly got that here. So tell me a little bit about the history of the Port Townsend Mill.
Oh, I love the history, and it was really interesting. I think the gentleman's name was Ed Sims, and I assume Sims
Way
was named after him. Uh-huh. So sometime, I'm not sure about this, 1925, he and some other gentlemen partnered to make a proposition to Ed Zellerbach of Crown Zellerbach, and they went to San Francisco with this idea to convince this guy to build a mill in Port Townsend. It was a lot of obstacles, if you could imagine. I can't even imagine traveling from Washington State to San Francisco in 1925. I mean, there's no Interstate 5. And
I guess it's by boat. That would be my bet.
Yeah, certainly can't get on a flight, yeah. So that makes it tough. But anyway, they convinced him. It was quite a sales job and got the jobs here at Port Townsend. So in 1927, they started the mill, and they also had to build a pipeline. I guess most people realize, but the water that we drink in Port Townsend and supplies the mill comes from the Bill Quilcene. So it's a pipeline that's about 39 miles long that some guys that were pretty inventive built back
wow,
then.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was actually made out of wood staves. They didn't, you think about pipe. Well, they didn't have pipe, so they put these wood staves together and banded them. And just the tenacity to do that is pretty amazing. And then, you know, we think about GPS and computer design and AutoCAD and all that. They had none of that, so they had to go and start this pipeline and know the route, figure it out, and pretty much dig it by hand, I guess. Got through all of that. The mill was built by driving pilings in the bay and then pouring concrete. It's very sturdy. Even today, I'm amazed at how sturdy they made the foundation. But by 1928, they started the mill up, and I guess it was making a number of products, corrugated medium and wrapping paper and even paper for bags. And it was fairly successful because at that time sawmills were pretty common on the Olympic Peninsula, and the chips, the residual chips from the sawmill were what this mill used to make the paper. And prior to the mill being here, I guess they all burned them and really got no value out of them. So this was a way to get a
value added.
Exactly. So the mill came along, and then through different ownership, I think Heindel purchased the mill from Crown Zellerbach, and then
Jumping ahead a little bit, the mill actually went into bankruptcy in recent years, right?
Yes, it was 2007, and there was a very tough time. I mean, anybody that owned a house knows what 2007, especially if you tried to sell one during that time.
Wow.
And of course, that's when the banks were in trouble and they couldn't get financing. And as a credit to the mill, the people at the mill were able to survive it. Of course, that's nothing good for anybody. I mean, the suppliers were hurt by that. It was a really difficult time, and a lot of companies went bankrupt during this time. But then they came out of it. I think a private equity group, Golden Tree, purchased the mill, and they owned the mill up until 2014 or 15. I guess it was February 2015, and that's when Lindsay Goldberg purchased the mill.
Okay, so Lindsay Goldberg, why do they think this mill is viable?
They, as a private equity firm, feel like the corrugated box business is a good business, good sound business. The thesis for purchasing this mill was it also had a corrugated box plant in Vancouver, Washington. And then the thought is, still is, that it would grow this business by acquiring other corrugated box plants and making it fully integrated. And integrated just means that you don't sell your paper on the outside market. You use it up at your own box plants.
Yeah, as much as you can.
Yes. So
you've only been here like 18 months. What are some of the things you've accomplished during this time?
Well, it seems like I'm busy all the time, but when you ask it that way, I'm not always sure I know. But the first year I was here, there were a number of things in the works. We had to dredge our ASB, our basin that treats the wastewater, and that was particularly an issue both from treatment of the wastewater and from odor, and we dredged it. That was done by July of 2015. Then we had to comply with MAC rules, which is maximum achievable control technology. On our power boiler, which burns bark, we had to reduce particulate emissions pretty significantly. So we installed extra precipitators. It was about a $10 million project and put in overfired air to help with our burning, which essentially helped us comply with the MAC rules. And it was a great project and seems to be doing really well.
So is it safe to say that combination of these things has reduced both odor and emissions?
Yes. And then the latest project that we're doing should reduce our carbon dioxide emissions fairly significantly. We're moving away from burning oil and using compressed natural gas, and that's about a $3 million project that is just now coming to completion. So it's should reduce our carbon dioxide emissions by 25%. And I'm pretty proud of the mill. They, long before I got here, prior people there at the mill, but since the last 10 years, the mill's reduced carbon dioxide emissions by 60%. And
wow.
This project will get us up to 70% over the 10-year period.
That's so pretty good.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's nice to know we're doing our part to help out.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, we're running short on time, but I wanted to ask you a bit about hiring at the mill. When you post a job or let a job be known, I mean, do you get a lot of applicants?
We do. I use the number 20 applicants for every one position, and we have pretty tough screening. And one of the things people don't realize is we invest a lot in our employees in training. We don't do a lot of formal training, but we have on-the-job training and we work with them. So I always say that by the time a person becomes a senior operator, it's equivalent to them having a PhD. So they're really smart. So we don't want to hire somebody that's not going to stick with us. So we do a lot of screening up front.
So I'm just curious. I've read that employers these days look at Facebook and other social media. Do you guys do that?
Not on entry level, but we and we really don't have a formal program, but I can tell you other employees do, and I hear a lot of stuff that's said, yeah. Whether it's new applicants or not, but we haven't initiated any formal one, but we will do background checks,
yeah,
and of course drug testing,
yeah,
and physicals and things to just help us make sure we're a good fit, because if the employee's not happy and we're not happy with them, that's just a terrible situation for us both.
Yeah, that would be very difficult, you know. And as you say, you spend thousands of dollars training people, so you want it to stick.
We do. And, you know, it's always tough because young people, much like I described earlier, it's tough going into shift work. They do the shift rotation at 5 o'clock p.m. and a.m. So you can imagine you're 23 years old and it's Friday afternoon and you're going to work and your friends are going to on dates or partying or going to play softball or something like that. It's very tempting to not go to work, and we don't want that. If they're committed to us, we want them to stay with us and have a career. So we're really looking for the person that will commit to us.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you won't believe this, but we literally are running out of time, but you've been in the Pacific Northwest for roughly 18 months. What are your first impressions of the region, but more importantly, the town of Port Townsend?
Well, I have find the town very interesting. It's never not interesting in that, and it reminds me a little bit of, I was saying this, of Charleston, where I most recently lived. Every restaurant is different. It has different food. You have a lot of different people, somewhat eclectic, and I enjoy that because it's not boring. So I found it a very nice place to live. It's interesting, too, in that there's a wide variety of people. People that have retired here, young people that are kind of bent towards the arts or looking for something, shop owners that want to try and start a business. And then you have people that have lived here forever. They're here and, you know, they're pretty nice to us. I call it newbies that come in. But I'm sure sometimes that's kind of tough when your world changes. And Port Townsend seems like it's changed a lot, certainly since 1927 when the mill first got here.
Yeah, no, it's changing all the time.
But overall, I really can't say how much I've been impressed with the beauty of the Northwest. I think I was explaining, my wife and I were able to go to Mount St. Helens or see Mount Rainier. I've been in the Olympics, hiked a number of trails. It's just a wonderful place to experience the outdoors.
Yeah, it is amazing. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Carr. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. I'm Marianne McNellis, the host of the show. Thank you so much for listening today. My guest today has been Carr Tindall, the general manager of the Port Townsend Paper Mill. So my faithful audience, stay tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.